Welcome to Open Minds Radio with your host, Alejandra Rojas, former official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network. Alejandra has been a UFO paranormal researcher and journalist for nearly a decade and has logged hours in the field investigating the paranormal up close and personal. And now Open Minds Radio presents evidence and the latest news regarding the UFO phenomenon. Here's your host, Alejandra Rojas.
Thank you for joining us on another spectacular night of Open Minds Radio at our new time, Monday night, 9 p.m. Arizona, which is in sync with Pacific right now. It changes to Mountain Time once in a while, weird state we live in. And, of course, if you've been following the news, there's a number of reasons why Arizona is quite a weird state. But we are your UFO authority. My name's Alejandro Rojas, and I am your host for the show. And we have a great show tonight. This is part two of our guest, Michael Luckman. He wrote the book Alien Rock, which talks about rock stars and their ET and UFO experiences. We talked about a lot of fun stuff last week with John Lennon and many others. Tonight, we're going to talk about Michael Jackson, get into some other stories, and Michael Luckman has also done a lot of research into a topic that's very popular these days, and that is 2012 and what might be happening when the Mayan calendar ends and renews. Will it be bad? Will it be good? Will it be both? Or like NASA has put up on their website, will nothing happen at all? Just like Y2K. Nothing really happened at all except for a bunch of people got drunk as usual on New Year's and woke up the next day feeling like the world had been destroyed, but it was just a bad hangover. So we'll be talking about that with Michael Luckman. It's going to be a lot of fun in a few minutes. I want to remind you of a local event. If you want to meet the Open Minds editors and researchers and such, we'll be at Vision Quest Metaphysical Bookstore on May 28th. That'll be at 7 p.m., and they are at 225 North Scottsdale Road. Or, if you don't want to travel that far for kind of a two-hour event, you can come to Roswell on the July 4th weekend. Actually, their events start July 1st, Thursday through Sunday, so that'll be a lot of fun. Sunday's the 4th, so you can come watch fireworks, and there's always a lot going on out there. There's something like 20,000 people that show up for their giant parade. We'll probably be in the parade. I was in the parade last year with Nick Pope, the UK Minister of Defense, who guy retired now, who used to investigate UFOs out there. You probably know much about him because I talk about him a lot. But that was a lot of fun. Jesse Marcel Jr., he'll be there again this year. Richard Dolan, a lot of speakers. Peter Robbins talks about abductions. I've had all these guys on my show before, so you can listen to the archives to hear what they're all about. But if you want to meet them in person, then come out to Roswell. My good buddy Chuck Zukowski, who's been on the show a couple times, will also be out there. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really excited about that. However, before we get into our guests, let's talk about UFOs in the news. There's always a lot going on with UFOs in conventional news headlines, and this week is no different from any other. So we have a lot of exciting stories that I want to talk about. We've got our news correspondent, Jason McClellan, here to share the stories with us.
Greetings, Alejandro.
Hello, Jason.
Hello, Phoenix, and hello, world. This is your Open Minds news brief for Monday, May 10th, 2010. In the news this week, with NASA turning over much of its ground-to-orbit transportation to commercial providers, many companies are hard at work building and testing spaceflight vehicles, and the U.S. Air Force is right there with them. The Air Force recently launched an unmanned X-37B orbital test vehicle. The X-37B is intended to orbit the Earth for several weeks while testing out several different systems and could be used to transport satellites and other equipment to and from space. The X-37B is often called a flying Twinkie because of its stubby wing shape. Its nickname isn't the only odd thing about this spaceship, though. The true details of the ship's mission have been kept secret, and there have been mentions of possibly using the ship as space weaponry.
Eek. But, of course, they want to use everything for weaponry. And, you know, I think these stories are important, just like we have unknown or unacknowledged aviation stories by Michael Stratt, our our aerospace historian on our website, so people, because people even still, you know, mistake the space station and the space shuttle for UFOs at times. So
right,
it's important to know what's up there.
I've seen them going through the sky before, and I grabbed my camera and started getting all excited. So, oh, right, space station.
It's still fun to see. It's incredible. It's so bright.
And it moves through the sky so fast.
Yeah.
It you don't realize it until you actually watch it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
In other NASA news, NASA's Mars meteorite research team says that a 4-billion-year-old meteorite has landed thousands of years ago. That landed thousands of years ago in Antarctica show evidence of microscopic life on Mars. The team also has presented research showing additional Martian meteorites with distinct and identifiable microbial fossils, further pointing to the existence of life on Mars. The team leader has said, "We feel more confident than ever that Mars probably once was and maybe still is home to life."
I can't believe that this story hit the news and has not made a big impact, even though this is actually the same rock. One of these rocks they're talking about is the same meteor they had found several years ago, and President Clinton, you know, had talked about it and talked about how we might have found life elsewhere, and then some people, scientists, debunked it, and they've been fighting about it for years. This is the same one, and now those NASA scientists had found further evidence to support what they had said in the beginning, which is these meteorites from Mars show what seemed to be fossilized bacteria and stuff.
And there's been a lot of Mars news in the news lately,
yeah.
You know, a lot more to support the evidence of life on Mars, water on Mars. You know, we talked last week, I think, about, you know, how methane gas has been discovered,
mm-hmm.
and the pond scum and all these different things on Mars. But there really doesn't seem to be that big of a deal made about it.
Yeah, and I'm excited because I think we're really close to them actually confirming something. And I'm interested to see. Some people say that it won't be a big deal. People are so used to hearing about it, they're not going to care. But it may be a big deal, and philosophically it is a big deal because it makes what we do more likely. If the next planet closest to us has life on it, well, second closest, I think Venus is closer. But if that's got life, then obviously it's abundant.
That'd be huge if it, you know, they finally come out and say it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping they do. You know, it's exciting because more and more every week it's coming out. It's just not being made a big deal of right now.
Yeah.
And I don't know why.
Yeah. Come on, people. Pay attention.
The governor of the Russian Republic of Kalmykia told a television anchor last week that he had been abducted by aliens. He also mentioned that the extraterrestrials communicated with him telepathically. State Duma Deputy Andrei Lebedev is worried, however, that the governor may have disclosed state secrets, and he wants Russia's president to investigate the issue.
This is hilarious, yeah, because this other MP is saying, hey, you know, this guy was taken and he knows secrets. What if he told the alien secrets? And he's making a big deal out of it. You need to tell him that, you know, he should have reported this earlier. And
right, he wants it investigated,
uh-huh.
And not by just anybody. He wrote a letter to the president of Russia
yeah.
And said, you need to look into this guy and his abduction story.
Yeah, and you got to find out what he told the aliens, and if they read his mind and know our secrets, and you have to develop a protocol. What are we supposed to do if we get taken by aliens? It's incredible that, you know, these guys are taking this stuff so seriously. It's great.
But the story's fascinating, though, because this guy actually went on...
Yeah.
On television, very serious, and told his story about, you know, being taken aboard a UFO. These were separate occasions,
mm-hmm.
the abduction and being on a UFO. But he was very serious about it. And this is a sharp, intellectual guy.
He's the president of the International Chess Club.
The World Chess Federation. He was the president at one time, and he's recently been invited back to be the president again.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a smart guy.
It's incredible.
So
yeah, it's an amazing story, and it keeps hitting the news, and it's still going on, so we'll see what happens with it.
I think the Russian president probably has other things to do, but it'll be interesting if he decides to look into it, or at least acknowledges it.
Well, what I did, maybe that's what will come out, what I did when I was talking to the aliens...
Look, I never released any of my secrets, so I think he's fine. He's a smart guy.
Right.
All right, in other news, construction has begun on the world's largest telescope in Chile. The $1.5 billion European Southern Observatory will be used to search for planets outside our solar system that may sustain life. The observatory's Atmospheric Detecting European Extremely Large Telescope, or EELT, will be an optical infrared telescope with a primary mirror 42 meters in diameter. That's more than 137 feet.
Wow. The EELT. Wow.
That's a huge mirror.
Yeah, incredible. And they're just going to find more and more planets with atmospheres that could support life. I mean, that's exciting.
With the addition of the telescope, Chile will certainly have the tools to become a global astronomy powerhouse. The telescope is scheduled to begin operating in 2018.
One of our main writers, Antonio, an editor, is from Chile. I wonder if this will inspire him to move home. I hope not. We'll lose him.
I hope not, but yeah. He could write a good story on it.
Yeah. We'll send him back to visit.
Maybe. He has too much to do here.
True.
Alejandro, that's all I have for the news.
All right. Well, I did want to talk about, we had talked a little and we didn't have time to get in, some of the UK sightings. Because, of course, Britain always has a lot of sightings. And they're, well, you know, it's another country that at least the media takes this subject very seriously because they've been reporting a lot. We talked earlier about Nick Pope. That probably helps because they have an ex-minister of defense who's worked on this stuff. Not Minister of Defense, it's Canada I'm thinking of, but someone who worked for the Ministry of Defense out there. But they've had a lot more sightings out there. In fact, just recently, one of their Air Force guys had reported an orange fireball. And I think this one's important because there have been lots of orange balls being reported in the last year. In their 2009 Ministry of Defense report, they had listed tons of these sightings, and they had a vast increase in sightings. Nick Pope thought perhaps they were due to an increase in Chinese lanterns being used at parties out there where you light up a candle in the middle of this ball, and it floats in the air. However, this is another case, and we're getting a lot of these cases where people are seeing these orange fireballs doing things that they shouldn't do. This one flew around in the sky. It then changed colors, and it floated slowly straight down. This was seen by the Air Force officer and his wife. So it's another case where these orange balls are kind of doing some strange stuff, showing that, you know, a lot of these sightings, and you see them a lot, are probably not these Chinese lanterns. And, you know, here in the States, in Pennsylvania, a lot of people saw these orange balls. They had a big flap for 3 years going on. I had John Ventry on the show before, and he talked about that. And even a sighting that hit the media where a bunch of people during the day saw one over one of the malls. So the mystery of the orange spheres is nowhere near being totally figured out yet. So stay tuned. Jason, you'll have to bring us more on that.
I will have to. There's been a lot researched about the orange balls, the Chinese lanterns, but we'll look more into that.
Yep. All right, stay tuned. We'll have Michael Luckman and more on Rock Stars and UFOs after the break.
You're listening to Open Minds Radio with Alejandro Rojas on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
Welcome back. I'm excited to have Michael Luckman back on the show, and I want to remind you that you can watch the show live on openminds.tv. We stream over Ustream, and we've got that there on our page. And you can also chat with us and ask any questions if you have any. We got a few people, some of our regulars in the chat room now. You can also call in at 602-277-5369. Or if you're watching online and you want to give us a call and you're outside of the Phoenix metro area, you can call 1-866-536-1100. And I believe we have Mr. Luckman on the phone. Hello, Michael. Are you there?
Hi, Alejandro. I'm fine. Thank you.
Great. It's great to talk to you again.
Well, it's good to be here. You know, it's an important subject. 2012 is around the corner. And,
right.
We need to define what it might mean for us.
Yeah, before we get into that, there is one person that I promised some of the people we would talk about, and that was Michael Jackson. You said, I know your book has Michael Jackson and some experiences he had.
Well, yes. I met Michael in New York about 5 years ago. And he was being, as usual, dogged by the paparazzi, and he was having really a hard time. So it wasn't the best circumstances, but I did learn some very important things. He had an experience when he was, I would say, in his early 20s. It happened when he was on a plane on a flight over Alaska, and he did see what he referred to as UFOs. It was some kind of something out there in the far beyond. He actually looked at it from the pilot's cockpit, and he asked the pilot whether he had ever seen anything like that, these UFOs, which are multicolored and like crystalline and just glowing out there. And the pilots had never seen anything like it, and he said he'll never forget the impression that it left with him. So he was very, very much into the subject, and even took it as far as he had a hope, anyway, of being able to perform his trademark moonwalk on the moon, and had gone so far as to talk to Yuri Geller, the psychic, about it and how he might go about getting onto the moon to do such a performance.
Well, it's too bad he wasn't able to, and maybe, you know, with commercial space faring, you know, becoming a bigger industry, you know, maybe if he's reincarnated as a child, he'll be able to do it in his next life.
Well, perhaps so. Perhaps so.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And, I mean, I was thinking about, you know, I mean, what a life this guy had. Often I think about, well, wasn't this sighting before he was famous? But Michael Jackson was famous his whole entire life.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
So what a life that he had.
Yes, and he was a card-carrying member of the New York Center for Extraterrestrial Research, my organization.
Wow.
He actually had a card that I had presented to him here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I have from him a copy of the card signed by him.
Cool.
He was very much into the subject. And, of course, he's also into a lot of other, you know, paranormal-type subjects.
Right. He was good friends with Yuri Geller, wasn't he?
He was, yes. At one point, he was very, very close to Yuri. And on one of Michael's albums, I'm not sure which one, Yuri had made some drawings which were very UFO-oriented that Michael treasured and included in the booklet.
Yeah, now that we talk about Yuri Geller, it's interesting that he came up so much last week and, you know, here again this week when
yes.
we talk about rock stars and his involvement with their lives.
Yes, absolutely.
And you knew him pretty well?
Yuri, that is?
Uh-huh.
Or Mike? I've spoken to Yuri a bunch of times, and, you know, as I indicated last week, I'm after him to have that small egg-shaped object that John Lennon
right.
he claims gave to him from the aliens, and see what that's all about.
Yeah, hopefully one day he'll allow that to be happened.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about these different rock stars, and before we get on to 2012, you know, one thing I would like to ask is, since you've written the book, have you come across other stories that you wish you would have known of that you could have included or anything new that perhaps you're going to include in a second volume?
Yeah, well, there is always a possibility of a follow-up book. What I didn't know when I wrote the book was about Robbie Williams.
Oh, right.
Now, of course, Robbie Williams is a pop star, number one in England and most parts of Europe, but virtually unknown here in the United States. And he did, however, buy a home here in the U.S. About 2 years ago in Hollywood, and was very much in the press. They were all over him wanting to know about his UFO experiences, and he had a number of unbelievable UFO experiences, including one where what he described as a sort of a strip of black light or blue light came into a recording studio while he was making a song that was a pro-alien or an alien contact song.
Wow.
And zipped around in the studio, apparently out the window, and he had some other experiences as well, and he really pursued this. He went to James Gillian's ranch out in the Seattle area, Seattle, Washington, and spent about the better part of 2 weeks camping out there, writing UFO songs, and photographing what he thought were true alien spacecraft.
Wow, I hadn't known that part. I was in at the UFO Congress a couple of years ago when he showed up, and it was funny because people are buzzing, and my friend Ross Hemsworth, you know, grabbed his equipment to go interview him.
Yes.
And I said, "What's going on?" And he says, "Robbie Williams is here." And I said, "Who? Robbie Williams?" I was like, I don't know who that is. Only the most famous pop star in the world. And he, like, you know, said that to me and ran off. I was like, oh, my gosh.
I don't know who
this guy is.
Sure. I was fortunate enough to have some inside information about Robbie and his UFO involvement. And that made big spreads in the British papers any number of times.
Yeah, he made a... I know.
I was hoping to make contact with him, which is about as easy as making contact with extraterrestrials. But it just unfortunately didn't happen. I really wanted to involve him in the space concerts that we spoke about.
Yeah, it's too bad. And I know even recently he said he regrets having said anything publicly, because now every single story written about him. Even today I was seeing something, new project he's working on, and of course they have to mention UFOs and his experience, and he's kind of been upset or disillusioned by that whole thing.
Well, he shouldn't be too disillusioned. After all, I mean, he did have one of his tours not so many years ago was called the Close Encounters Tour, and it featured lights in a spaceship configuration. So I think that he's fully into this. The question, of course, is they always do, these rock stars always do have to do with commercial reality, and sometimes their managers get on them. For example, Elvis's manager, Colonel Tom Parker, gave Elvis a terrible time about his interest in UFOs and the occult and the paranormal. And, and actually, literally, not too many people know this, burned, had Elvis's collection of about 300 or 400 books on UFOs and the like burned.
Wow.
So they give him a message that he didn't want him involved with it.
Well, I would think it would make these guys more popular. It makes them more eccentric, which is what people think entertainers are. So I'm surprised that their managers would shy away like that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, when it comes to UFOs, it's like a separate category in many people's minds, and that's changing, of course. I would say it's rapidly changing, and I think I think Open Minds magazine is very much indicative of that change, as well as all of these hundreds of former military guys who have come forward and said that they'll testify before Congress, if granted immunity from prosecution, so that they can tell what they know, and it's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot, and thank you for mentioning the magazine. We're really proud of it, and, Antonio, who you've worked with, a great writer, and we had, speaking of the military officers, Robert Salas on last week, or a couple of weeks ago now, who had his experiences, and then James Peniston, who is at the Rendlesham Air Force Base, or Rendlesham Forest out there in the UK, is going to be on next week to talk about. But these are two people, just like you're talking about, who are ex-military, who had experiences. Well,
absolutely.
When we get back, we got to take a break, but we'll come back and we'll talk about your 2012 research. This ought to be great, so stay tuned to Open Minds Radio.
This is Open Minds Radio. Here again, your host, UFO paranormal researcher and journalist, Alejandro Rojas.
Welcome back. This is Open Minds Radio, and I'm your host, Alejandro Rojas. We have Michael Luckman on, who's a researcher into rock stars and their UFO-ET connection. However, he's also done an abundance of research on 2012, and we're going to talk to him about that. But I do want to mention the magazine that he just mentioned earlier. you can get at openminds.tv. We're very close. We're going to have our second issue out very soon, so we're excited about that. But at openminds.tv, and also look in your local bookstore come June 1st, and you'll see we're going to do some cool stuff with the magazines at Barnes & Noble and Borders, and so you'll have to check that out. But, Michael, you wanted to talk about 2012, and it's, of course, a hot topic that everybody wants to hear about. So why don't you give us some insight into what got you interested in 2012?
Well, I got pulled in on 2012 having to do with some stories that appeared concerning the Mayan calendar, mm-hmm. sort of the way that most people get pulled into 2012. However, unfortunately, the basic premise that I was pulled in by turns out to be, you know, incorrect, essentially. Basically, to summarize 2012 in regard to the Mayan calendar, the Mayans, according to the Mayan elders, the calendar date of December 21st, 2012, the last day on the calendar, does not mean a specific physical upheaval of any kind
right.
on that date or anywhere near that date necessarily. However, having said that, in their estimation, it does mean other changes. And we can see unbelievable changes going on every day when it comes to the entire business structure of the world. What could be more fundamental than that?
Mm-hmm.
So anyone who denies any kind of connection with 2012 or the importance of it, we're obviously getting very close to it. And what intrigued me also, of course, was the overlap between different cultures of this general time period, whether it's 2012, 2013, 2010, and any dates, any and all dates in between. I saw the this overlap immediately was clear to me in terms of not only the Mayans but the Aztecs, the people from all the Bible people from all points of view, the so-called end times, of course, and as indicated in the Bible, and so I was intrigued to look into this some more. Now, according to the Mayan elders, they feel Mayans are always very involved with the sun, and they're very big on astronomy. And they were concerned about, and very much are concerned about, the sun and what kind of damage the sun could do and might do to us, whether it's in 2012 or in the years approaching or even following 2012. There are things that we don't have to even trust the Mayan elders. We could go right to some current NASA scientists who feel that the sun could be very dangerous for us. Now, the sun is a very hot place, and it could be dangerous for us at any time, spewing forth emissions that could wipe out the entire planet, in a heartbeat. However, it just so happens that 2012, and this information, unfortunately, doesn't make it any easier, keeps changing, so that what mm-hmm. looks like one situation at one point regarding 2012, not tied in with the Mayan calendar as far as NASA is concerned, just the fact that that's when it happens to be, is that we're entering a period where the sunspots are projected to be enormous. Sunspots, now the sunspots drive our weather. Sunspots as large as planets, perhaps, in relation to the sun.
Right.
And other things that may happen that could wipe out our whole satellite or part at least of our satellite system. Now that would do unbelievable devastation, cause unbelievable devastation to planet Earth, and really put us through. All of our communications work via satellite, and there are all kinds of things that would suddenly change, and for the worse, I'm afraid. And it could be, you know, it could be devastating. On the other hand, it might not be as devastating as we think. This year, the sun spots were, there were scientists were waiting for some sunspots. There were remarkably few sunspots, mm-hmm. I think just one or two. And the first one that the sun managed to squeeze out, guess what? Wasn't round as they normally are. It was square.
Square, weird. Yeah, I know we're kind of in a valley when it comes to peaks and valleys of the solar cycle, and 2012 is at a peak.
Right.
And, you know, I was looking at, you know, late 90s, how there was a big solar flare that caused some problems with communication devices. And they were speculating that if that kind of thing happened in 2012, we're so much more reliant on the satellites and the
Absolutely.
Communication systems that think of the devastation of these poor teenage and middle school girls when they can't use their cell phones for a day or two. No text messaging. They won't be able to communicate with each other.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I'd like to move into a discussion about a little bit on Fatima.
Okay.
Because Fatima is a
Is that
very
this in relation
world.
To 2012 also?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah.
Fatima happened in 1917. Mm-hmm. And essentially what happened was that three little shepherd kids encountered what they thought was the Mother Mary. In investigating the case, I found, and other researchers have found, that there's a lot of UFO, what could be considered UFO activity, in terms of what they actually saw. More important than that, there was a massive event that happened, which was the so-called Miracle of Fatima, also referred to by some religious people as the dancing sun, that is a phenomenon.
Right.
The people were drawn to a field on a particular day to witness a miracle that had been announced to prove that the kids had actually had contact with the Virgin Mary and that they had certain predictions and stuff and given to them. And what happened was these people showed up. They didn't know exactly what they're looking for. It's a very rainy day. They're looking up in the sky.
And it was like a lot of people, right? I think
70,000 people.
70,000.
And there are plenty of photographs of these people. There was news coverage of this.
Mm-hmm.
They're hanging out there, and they're looking up at the sky. They don't know what they're waiting for. Suddenly, there's a break in the clouds, and there is in the position where the sun would be. And this, according to journalists as well as priests and other just eyewitnesses there.
Right.
There was a disc right where the sun would be, an enormous silver-gray disc with lights reflecting off, spinning off the outer edge of the disc. And the disc moved kind of erratically in the sky. And then at one point appeared to plunge toward the earth. And the people were in great fear, and they you know, got down on the ground, and they're praying for forgiveness and hoping that their lives will be spared. All of a sudden, the disc goes back up into the sky at the, you know, more or less at the sun, where the sun would normally be. There isn't any sun. There's just this disc. And people who had been soaked by the rain, their clothes are all dry. The ground is completely dry. And that was that particular event. Now, through the years, the church was given from the kids. The church had the three miracles, and they have to do essentially with, World War I and World War II. But the third miracle, the most important miracle of all, was withheld by the Vatican, and only released about maybe 6 years ago or so, 7 years ago. And when it was released, there was great criticism that this wasn't the actual text of the miracle.
And they knew this information for years, and yes. held on to it and only released
Absolutely.
It, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, the Pope was down in Fatima, Portugal, some years ago. I think it was in the early 1980s, Pope John Paul II. And he was asked by some visiting pilgrims there, why does the church withhold this information? And his answer was, and in giving the answer, he just about gave the thing away. He said, well, that it would only serve the cause of sensationalism if there were an event that was going to happen in the near future that could wipe out or would wipe out, you know, millions and tens of millions of people and more, hundreds of millions of people, from one moment to the next, as a result of ocean flooding.
Eek. That's scary. Now, we have to go to break, so we're going to pick up the rest of that story, and I think where you're going with it, I see where you're going, but the Fatima story and its relation to 2012 with Michael Luckman coming up right after this break. You're listening to Open Minds Radio.
Welcome back to Open Minds Radio. Here now, former official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network, your host of Open Minds Radio, Alejandro Rojas.
Thanks for staying tuned. You're listening to Open Minds Radio, and we're talking to Michael Luckman about 2012 Fatima, the Fatima miracles, if you've heard of that, something the Vatican takes very seriously, and the Pope, which is relaying a story from the Pope for us, and it's UFO relations, because this thing, Michael, the sun sighting that you talked about, I mean, flew around and very much had the same characteristics as many UFO sightings.
Unquestionably. And there's also this. There's a man by the name of Father Malachi Martin. Unfortunately, he died a number of years ago. But Malachi Martin was an insider at the Vatican. He was an assistant, or at least close with any number of popes, including John Paul II. He was definitely in a position, Malachi Martin, to have contact and knowledge of the content of the third miracle of Fatima. And he, even though he kept the lid on it for very many years, he ultimately did say this, and he said a lot in a few words. He said that it was his understanding that an object was headed toward Earth, a comet type of object or an incoming celestial object, however you want to look at it. Some people have referred to the so-called Wormwood comet that's referred to in the Bible. But whether it's the Wormwood comet or perhaps as other people think, a lot of people on the Internet think that it could be the legendary Planet X coming here, which is on its way here and which has those kind of devastating effects. Whether that's going to happen anytime soon remains to be seen. Even Zechariah Sitchin, the chief proponent of Planet X theory,
right,
doesn't think that it's coming right away. However, mm-hmm. other people do. I happen to be one of them. I happen to think that there's a possibility that that's exactly what's happening.
Well, and he got this information from ancient writings from the Sumerians,
yes.
And a lot of the Bible seems to be also reflective of ancient Sumerian stories.
Yeah, it all seems to correlate very, very well, and it's the best explanation I know of. I mean, how did the ancient Sumerians, and by the way, what's interesting is that Samaria is located in northern Iraq, of all places.
Right, the Fertile Crescent. In Iraq.
Yeah, but how did the Sumerians know all of the characteristics and the positions, relative positions of all of the planets in our solar system, plus the existence of one more, which was Nibiru or Planet X.
And Sitchin's pretty much saying they got this knowledge from aliens that had come down and enslaved them.
He is. He calls him the, he refers to them, they're referred to actually in Sumerian writings as the Anunnaki, and the references in the Bible too, to them, those who, you know, from heaven to earth come. And what's intriguing, perhaps one of the most intriguing stories that I've ever heard in all my years of being involved in ufology, has to do with the possible landing in of the Anunnaki, several of them, at Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico, that was witnessed by and engaged in by several military officers, and supposedly filmed by our government. This is certainly ultimate type of evidence of the, you know, of the existence, either the existence of contact with these, knowledge of contact with these beings, or at the very least, even if it turns out that the Holloman film was a, and I say the Holloman film, a few people have seen it, but most people haven't seen it at all. I've not seen it. I wish I had seen it.
Yeah.
But this film, at the very least, represents a training film that might have been put together by the government for psychological purposes to test, you know, whether or not, you know, how people would react to the quote reality of a UFO, an actual UFO landing. The Nixon administration turned out to be involved with this film. Wow. Knew of the H.R. Haldeman of Watergate infamy, knew of the existence of this film. I don't know whether he had seen it or not, but he knew of the existence of the film. And the plan apparently was to release the film at the, you know, prior to when Watergate happened. When Watergate actually happened, they decided, the government, to pull back the film, because it had been offered to several journalists, to pull back the film and not release it, because they felt that it might, you know, that the government might.
I think I know which film you're talking about, and they had offered it to Disney Corporation and to an HBO film company, and but I didn't know the information about the Anunnaki, and that there was a relation between that film and these beings.
Yes. Absolutely. There was a Linda Howe, the cattle mutilation researcher, was one of the people actually offered the film. She didn't see the film, but she was offered the film. And Robert Emmenager is another one.
Yeah, and he actually, I believe, had seen the film.
He didn't actually see the film, from what I could tell. However, people who we knew had seen the film, and he was, you know, told by various people, including H.R. Haldeman. I mean, they seemed to indicate that they seemed to want him to put this thing out. Let's put it that way.
Interesting. And then, yeah, that's an interesting story that they never did put that film out. They just kind of teased people with it. And then
now,
pulled it back.
I don't remember, Alejandro, whether I had mentioned the existence of a signal last time we spoke.
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, one thing that does happen, we know, on December 21st, 2012, the last day on the Mayan calendar, is there's an alignment with the center of our Milky Way galaxy. That is the alignment of Earth with the center of the Milky Way galaxy. Precisely from that area, currently, is a recurrent, what could be an alien beacon, or at least a signal being put out in the direction of Earth, or at least that's being monitored down here by scientists, by astronomers. And they haven't figured it out yet. It's not, I mean, they certainly haven't deciphered it. If it's an intelligent signal, it could be something that's just there and is not intelligent at all. or it could be intelligent. What puts it on the side of perhaps being intelligent is that it's very loud and very repetitive. That's amazing to me. What's also amazing to me is that the majority of the legitimate crop circles, that is the ones that we think are legitimate, it's very hard to tell, but of the ones that have been around, let's say, for the last 10 years, and that have not been dismissed as hoaxes, the majority of those crop circles have Anunnaki / Planet X / Nibiru symbols. That's what they're all about.
Like Sumerian type symbols?
Planet X type symbols.
How are they able to determine what type of symbols come from Planet X?
Where the symbols? You might be right. I mean, it's undoubtedly as recorded by the Sumerians.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I didn't know about that part.
Yeah, as recorded by the Sumerians, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think will happen when December 21st, 2012 comes in the last few seconds? What do you think will happen shortly? Quick answer.
It's impossible to give a quick answer on that. I wish I knew. What I do know is it's not the end of the world. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine as the song goes. I don't know either about that. I would say that we'll get through it. However, what precedes it and what follows it, I don't know.
Yeah.
In other words, that date is not to be too, not, one isn't to be too concerned about that date. It's sort of a, I look at it as a marker, but I don't look at it as an actual end times date.
Well, great. Thanks for being on the show again. You know, that's a good positive. We don't have to hopefully worry about the end of the world and major destruction. But thank you, Michael, for being on the show again. Check out Alien Rock, and we've got links on our show to his book. Next week, we're going to have James Peniston, who is an Air Force Staff Sergeant for the U.S. Air Force at the Royal Air Force Base at Bentwaters, with an incredible, probably the best documented UFO case ever. So you're going to want to hear about this and him actually walking up and touching a craft. He explained this on Larry King, but we'll talk more about it next week. So tune in to Open Minds Radio. Remember, next Monday, 9 p.m. See you next week. I live in a town where you can't smell a thing. You watch your feet for cracks in the past.